Make no mistake about it, Fujita countered. Each of us will be tested by Mars. Our strength, our intelligence, our character, all will be tested by this alien world. The eight of us against Mars, murmured Stacy Dejurova. Dex Trumbull said, just like the seven against Thebes. The what? Rodriguez asked. It's an ancient Greek play, Trumbull replied, by Euripides. By Aeschylus, corrected Fujita. Dex glared at him. Euripides. Euripides wrote The Phoenician Women, Fujita said confidently. It was Aeschylus who wrote The Seven Against Thebes. Interrupting their dispute, Jamie said, It's not the eight of us against Mars. We're here to learn how to live with Mars, to teach the others who'll follow us how to live here. Damn straight, muttered Possum Craig. Trumbull conceded the point with a nod, then probed. So, when are we going to move our base of operations to the canyon area? It was an argument they had gone over for months during the flight. Life had been found in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Why not establish the expedition's base there? Suppressing a burst of irritation, Jamie said, It makes no sense to move our base. We can traverse out to the canyon and survey the area for a secondary base when the next team comes. If a next team comes, Trumbull muttered. This isn't going to be the last expedition to Mars, Jamie said firmly. We're part of an ongoing effort. Not if we just diddle around and don't accomplish anything. Jamie felt his temper simmering. We're here to accomplish several goals. This base is well situated and working fine. Except for the toilets, Dejurova chipped in. She said it with an unlikely grin, but no one laughed. It would take a month or more to move this camp, Jamie went on tightly. And by going to the canyon, we move away from the volcanoes. Look, Trumbull said, hunching forward eagerly, I'm just as interested in the volcanoes as you are. I'm a geophysicist, remember? Before Jamie could reply, Dex went on. But the people who've put up the money for this expedition want to see results. Everybody's screaming to know what those lichen are all about. The volcanoes are dead. Let's get our priorities straight, for God's sake. Who says the volcanoes are dead? Fujita snapped. We don't know that. Jamie took a breath. Our priorities were decided more than 2 years ago, and the people who are funding us agreed to them. We're not here for show business. We're here to determine how widespread life is on this planet, if we can. Trumbull slouched back in his chair, the grin on his face close to a sneer. If we can, he mimicked. Trudy Hall spoke up. I want to get down into that canyon and study the lichen, of course, she said in her soft Yorkshire accent. But I also want to see if there's life elsewhere. The volcanoes, the cores Possum's going to drill, up at the ice cap. We've got a whole world to explore. Before Trumbull could argue, Jamie said, Look, Dex, everybody, we're going to be here for a year and a half. Moving the base isn't a decision we have to make tonight. Especially with the toilets not working, Dejurova piped. You mean you'll consider moving later on? Trumbull probed eagerly. Feeling tired of the whole matter, Jamie nodded. I'll consider it, depending on what we find both at the canyon and elsewhere. Trumbull's expectant grin faded. That's like a parent telling his kid, we'll see. It means no, but you don't want to argue about it. I'm not your daddy, Dex. Trumbull snorted. That's for damn sure. As your faithful physician, Vijay Shekhtar said, a bright smile on her dark-skinned face. I have the authority to prescribe a certain amount of celebratory stimulant for this occasion. Like all the others, she was wearing tan coveralls, but with her lush figure, the strained fabric looked enticing. Medicinal alcohol, said Stacy Dejurova, her somber face lighting up. Strine champagne, actually, Shekhtar replied. I brought two bottles. I have an excellent Scotch whiskey, Fujita said enthusiastically. Hell, all I brought, said Craig, was a quart of red-eye. Jamie leaned back in his chair. Vijay's defused the argument, he realized. She's a pretty good psychologist. He remembered the first night on the first expedition. The mission regulations had strictly prohibited alcohol or drugs, so everybody had smuggled a bottle or two in their personal effects. everybody except Jamie, who had been added to the team so late that he never had time even to think about booze. He hadn't carried any with him this time, either. "I should have brought something," he chided himself. "That's a mistake." Sure enough, Trumbull asked across the table, "And what has our revered leader brought for the party?" Jamie made himself grin. He spread his hands. "Nothing, I'm afraid."
"Not even a six-pack of beer?" Craig asked.
"Not even a button or two of peyote?" Trumbull added. Jamie just shook his head. He remembered that even the dour Vosnesensky, so safety-conscious as leader of the ground team that he was almost paranoid, had produced some vodka on that first night. Jamie got to his feet, and all their banter stopped. "Okay, have a party. You've earned it. But only this one night.
Starting tomorrow morning, no liquor until we're safely on our way back home."
"Correct," Dezurova said, and they all scrambled to their quarters and their stashes. Jamie stayed for one sip of Schechter's champagne, then retreated to his quarters. He worked on his daily report and studied the plans for the traverse back to the canyon, where the first expedition had abandoned a rover vehicle that had sunk into a crater filled with treacherous sand. It was hard to concentrate on the work, with the others singing limericks at the top of their lungs to the tune of Cielito Lindo. "Ay, ay, 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 your mother swims after troop ships, so sing me another verse, worse than the other verse, waltz me around again, Willie." Stacy Dezurova's voice rang above all the rest, a rich, clear soprano. She could have been an opera star, Jamie realized. Madame Butterfly. A chunky, dour Madame Butterfly. The limericks got raunchier and raunchier, including one that Trumbull loudly proclaimed had been written by no less than Isaac Asimov. "A harlot from South Carolina tied fiddle strings across her vagina. With proper-sized cocks, what was sex became box, toccata and fugue in G minor." Then Schechter's unmistakable Aussie voice rose above the babble.
"Do any of you know the Jolly Tinker?"
Silence. Jamie could sense them all shaking their befuddled heads. In the mezzo-soprano, Schechter began,
"Oh, the Tinker was a-strolling down the strand, with his knapsack on his shoulder and his penis in his hand."
Everyone laughed uproariously. The song went on and on, worse and worse. Jamie wondered if they would be in any shape for work the next morning. Diary entry. "We've made it down at last. After 5 months cooped up in that sardine tin. Another day in that metal coffin and I would have started screaming. The dome is bigger, more spacious, but it's strange. It doesn't smell right. I know that something's wrong here. The dome smells bad." Night. Sol 1. Jamie waited until they at last quieted down before he stripped off his clothes and pulled a pair of jockey shorts and a t-shirt from his garment bag. "I ought to unpack the clothes and stow them away properly," he told himself. But he felt too tired, drained physically and emotionally, to do anything but lie back on his bunk. "I'll get up early tomorrow and do it." He had plugged his laptop into the dome's power line and set it up beside the bunk, where he could reach the keyboard easily. He tapped into a news broadcast from Earth, realizing that whatever he saw and heard had been beamed from a satellite a quarter hour earlier. Most of the major news and entertainment networks on Earth had gladly agreed to beam their broadcasts to Mars free of charge. The expedition planners had willingly paid the costs of setting up the transmitters. A link with home was important for the explorer's emotional well-being, even if the link was only electronic. Jamie saw the eight of them in their blank-faced hard suits standing on the red sands of Mars, mouthing their little speeches. Then the screen cut to scenes of schoolchildren watching the landing ceremony. The second landing on Mars did not draw the huge throngs of people that the first landing had. Jamie stretched back on his bunk and locked his fingers behind his head. Well, that's natural enough, I guess. The first time's exciting for the general public. The second landing looks a lot like the first one did. There won't be any excitement back home unless we run into some real trouble. Or unless we find... Someone tapped at his door.
Almost annoyed at the interruption, Jamie called, "Who is it?"